How do believers retain a sense of urgency and immediacy after a time of long delay? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. We continue our series on 1 and 2 Thessalonians. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Emily Flotman, member of the pastoral staff at the Walla Walla University Church. Welcome to both of you.
Greetings.
Thank you.
I'd like to start with that question that I posed right at the beginning. How do we maintain urgency and yet life as usual? How do we put those together? Wouldn't you admit that if we have too much urgency, it's difficult to carry on life as usual?
Well, you're setting this in the context of I think last week's lesson where Paul was talking about the second coming of Jesus.
Right.
And, of course, the minute you open up the question of the second coming of Jesus, people want to know when it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think I've heard you quote a famous statement that the minute you bring up the subject of Jesus, the second coming, there's several things that you can be guaranteed. That one is that you don't know when it'll be.
Yep.
The question of urgency, in some ways, in my mind, is artificial because for, 1,900 years, 2,000 years, Christians have been expecting the return of Jesus. It has not yet happened. So, I don't know. I guess in some seasons of Earth's history, the urgency is much higher, mm-hmm. and in other seasons it's lower. It has produced some foolishness in the Christian community, though, the attempts to, mm-hmm. when the urgency gets too high. I suppose that we have to balance between what's sometimes called eschatomania, mm-hmm. the frantic expectation of Jesus' return, and eschatophobia, and that's the fear of ever saying anything about it at all.
So. Eschatos is the Greek word for last, thinking about the last things.
And I do think that when we become manic about it, we damage religious faith quite significantly. We run that risk. It's kind of like the old wolf syndrome. Mm. You can't maintain such high levels of excitement indefinitely before you blow a fuse. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, Alden, I'd like to hear you talk about how you balance it, because you have more life experience than either Emily or I.
Well, that reference to a quote that I've used, and I don't know if I can cough it up as C.S. Lewis wrote it, but it is in his essay, World's Last Night, where he talks about the experiential value of not knowing when the coming is going to be. Mm. And he says, we must never talk to simple, excitable people about the day without emphasizing again and again the utter impossibility of prediction. We must try to show them that the impossibility is an essential part of the doctrine. If you do not believe in our Lord's words, why do you believe in his return at all? And if you do believe them, must you not put away from you utterly and forever any hope of predicting that return? His teaching on the subject quite clearly consisted of three propositions. One, that he will certainly return. Two, that we cannot possibly find out when. Three, therefore, we must always be ready. And that's what the New Testament teaches. And that's what Paul uses here in 1 Corinthians 5, the first verse. Now, brothers and sisters, about times and dates, we do not need to write you, for you know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. Now, it's not the thief who comes to steal stuff, but it's the unexpectedness of the thief in the night. That's the point here. And it's Matthew 24 uses the same thing. You don't know when it's going to be. Mm-hmm. If you knew when the thief was going to come, you'd get ready. But you don't know.
And actually, in some of those verses in Matthew, it sounds like in some ways life will be going on as normal, because it says, as in the days of Noah, people will be marrying, giving in marriage, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. In fact, it's a fascinating glue joint. You have that first part of Matthew 24 that talks about signs, and then just like that. But it's going to be a surprise. Mm-hmm. And so I put here, in our study guide, Paul's admonition to lead a quiet life and peace and safety. Now, peace and safety in 1 Thessalonians 5:3 is a negative phrase. Mm. Let me go read on again from where we were. For you know very well the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying peace and safety, destruction will come on them suddenly as labor pains on a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. But you, brothers and sisters, are not in darkness so that this day should surprise you like a thief. You are all children of the light and children of the day. We do not belong to the night or to the darkness. So then, let us not be like others who are asleep, but let us be awake and sober. So it's a very strong emphasis on the sense of imminence. And I'm thinking of another quote here about Shakers. And Dave, I know you have a love for Shaker furniture. And somebody asked Thomas Merton, how is it that the Shakers could produce such wonderful furniture when they believe that the world is going to end at any moment? And Merton put it this way, when you expect the world to end at any moment, you have no need to hurry. You take your time. You do your work well.
You see, I think of another story. I think this came out of Hartford, Connecticut in 1833 when the great dog day of the Northeast took place, where the Congress people, the governing body, was in session, and the sky got dark, and a page came running in and yelled to everybody that it must be the day of the Lord because the sky was getting dark, and the man who was chairing the session thought about it for a minute, and he says, well, he says, we can't tell for sure what's happening, but if this is the day the Lord is coming, I'd just soon we'd be at work as anywhere else. And so the session, I think Paul alludes to that here, that we should be vigilant and we should be sober. In other words, we should be taking care of the business of life, but living with the expectation that this could be the day when Jesus comes.
There's another story, since we're telling stories here, that tells the same thing. I think this is one by Uncle Arthur Maxwell. Tells a man hiring a, he was hiring a hired hand. And he told this guy, he said, well, now, if there's a major storm or something like that, I expect you have to get up in the middle of the night. And all this guy would say was, I can sleep on stormy nights. Well, it's curious, but they hired him. And sure enough, first storm came up, just a real howler. And this man went out and tried to wake up his hired hand and couldn't wake him up, just angry at this guy. So he went out, and everywhere he went, everything had been fastened down and tied just perfectly. And then he understood what he meant. I can sleep on stormy nights. And I think the Christian ought to be able to sleep on stormy nights rather than panicked about when the Lord's going to come.
Well, and I think that it speaks to, we often say he's going to come as a thief in the night. And I remember growing up, that was a fearful thing. I had a fear. But he goes on to say, but you are not in darkness. And so he seems to make a contrast of those that say peace and safety and life's going on and usual and the fear that he may come any moment to... We're not like that. We have everything strapped down, as in your illustration. And so that he may come in thief in the night is not fearful, because we have him and we are secure in him now. And so that brings hope.
Yeah. I'm convinced, though, that part of the difficulty is what happens naturally in a sinful world when you have very conscientious, deeply religious people. They know that God is high and holy and mighty. And for them to imagine to be in God's presence as someone like that, it just, and one of the best places to see this is when you go to Mount Sinai, where God was smoking the mountain and everything. And the people said, you know, if we hear the voice of our God once more, we will die. We can't stand this. So Moses, you go in. It's really kind of funny. You talk to him because you apparently know how to survive, but we don't. And so there is this sense, and I think that was part of my difficulty. How in the world could I be good enough to be saved by this high and holy God? And that, I think, is part of the challenge that we face. Now, there's one other aspect that I think we ought to touch on here, and that is the phenomenon of date setting. Now, the Seventh-day Adventist community goes back to 1844 and the Great Disappointment. Although, interestingly enough, if you read the literature, not just Adventist literature, but any literature, you'll discover that everyone, virtually everyone who was a Christian, expected some great event to happen about that time, 1843, 1844. Now, there were differences of what the event was, but their interpretation of biblical prophecy was such that, you know, this is when the Lord's going to come. Now, when that didn't happen, Adventists, Seventh-day Adventists, took up what you might call the concept of conditional prophecy if there is an if. This is based on the book of Jonah, for example. The way God uses if in the Old Testament is really quite fascinating. God told Jonah, well, we don't know what God told Jonah, but the message was, I'm going to come and destroy Nineveh unless those people respond. Okay? And when Jonah preached, he didn't preach with an if. He just said, 40 days and Nineveh will be destroyed. No conditional, no ifs, ands, or buts. 40 days, Nineveh will be destroyed. But the king of Nineveh, who was a pagan, said, who knows? Maybe God will repent. And sure enough, God repented. And Jonah gets angry. So that stories like that, and there are a number of them in the Old Testament that lead to the suggestion of conditionality. But what is it that feeds the impulse to set dates? Have you ever been close to a date-setting person or to a date-setting movement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's a way of resolving the tension. For some people, it's a way of knowing precisely when you need to reform your life and make peace with God because you only have a little time left. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I think some of it, I know in our community, I think it's an excitement over the event itself. And if you can actually tie it, if you can identify a time at which you think it's going to actually happen, it's like, you know, anticipating the day of your wedding. Mm-hmm. That if you know that there is a date set, then you're on a trajectory to a particular point. If you're just engaged indefinitely, then, mm-hmm. you know, and I think there's an element of that. We as people, we like concrete things that we can see coming our way and know for sure.
I think some of it also, though, comes from fear and lack of trust. I know there's people in my life that are very consumed with setting dates and knowing everything that's going to happen and when it's going to happen because they got to be prepared. Not as far as be prepared in relationship with Jesus, but I have to know what's going to happen and so I can make plans. And so I think that comes from a fear and a lack of trust that we're in God's hands and in his control. And we may be surprised, but he is not.
Well, I remember talking to a student, very devout, very bright, and one day he just simply said to me, he says, Thompson, he says, you have no idea the excitement that comes from being involved with a date-setting movement. And he had been part of one.
Mm-hmm.
And I simply told him, and I said, I'm quite sure that I can't possibly imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also can't imagine the crushing disappointment that comes when...
As we saw just last summer with that one group.
Yeah, and that's just a crushing thing. So, again, we have to try to live in such a way that life as usual goes on. Mm-hmm. That probably means that we will use a combination of threats and promises because people respond so differently, and that's something we just have to learn to live with. Now, next week, our topic is church life, and we get in the last part of 1 Thessalonians where Paul gives a ton of advice to the church. Dave and Emily will be my conversation partners again. My thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in. For Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.